supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to another sparkling edition of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a new homeowner in Grand Rapids has an old cottonwood stump from a dead tree she cut down. She wants to think about practicing hygge culture, piling up mounds of dirt over old wood to see if that's going to work in her locale. We got a better idea for her, and we'll tell you all about it after lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Morris, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Morris. How are you, man?
Very good. I hope you are, too.
I am just ducky. Where is Morris very good?
I'm in Hopewell Township, New Jersey.
Okay. What's the nearest town?
Pennington.
All right. Very good. What can we do for Morris in the Garden State?
Mike, I planted a southern magnolia about 35 years ago. And we love the tree. We love the flowers. It's now over 30 feet tall, and it's shading my photovoltaic solar panels. I want to crop off the top 6 feet that I possibly can. I don't want to kill the tree, so I'm looking for advice.
Well, you know, that's never a good idea. Anytime you look at any kind of a tree, the new growth is always coming from the top. It's getting taller. So that's the healthiest part of the tree. That's the tree most susceptible to damage. That's also the tree that a bad cut can allow rot and insects to get into, and then you can't get up there to help it out. How are the solar panels mounted? Are they on the ground? Are they on a roof?
They're on the roof of our garage.
Right, and there's no way that you can kind of move them.
No, that wouldn't be easy or inexpensive, but it's not shading it too long. Maybe it's only an hour or two before the sun passes by, so I guess it's a compromise.
Yeah, and obviously if you know how much shade is being thrown, so to speak, you know what part of the tree is shading it. Is it the very top of the tree, and does this magnolia really come to a fine point?
It does come to a point.
Yeah. You know, the more a tree comes to a point, the worse an idea it is to top it, because that point really contains all of the new growth. You know, fruit trees and deciduous trees that just keep sending up random branches straight up, it can't corn to take those long branches off. In fruit trees, it's an excellent idea to keep them manageable in size. How thick is the magnolia at the top?
I would say, just a second, I'm looking out the window now. I would say at the top it's probably about 5 feet wide.
What I would suggest you can do, if you really want to, again, chart the course of the sun and really, you know, maybe put some, I don't know, Christmas balls up there, something that you're really going to be able to recognize the distinct shadow of.
Right.
You could do some side pruning.
Okay.
But you would want to avoid taking off that central leader because you only got one. You're not going to get a new one.
Right.
And it would really make the tree ugly. But you may be able to modify the effects by doing, like, you know what I mean? A little sideways pruning, you know, taking a little bit off the side.
Right. I'm constantly taking the flowers off to put, you know, to give as gifts or put in the house for the aroma, so I could just do that at the top.
Yes, and don't be afraid that if, you know, you do trim a little into the tree and it looks a little lopsided, don't be afraid to go over and do the other side or do it in a circle so it looks more natural.
Right. Well, good.
Yeah, it would be a sin. The magnolias are so spectacular, as you know.
Yes.
And, yeah, I would do everything I can to moderate the effect, but I would not cut the top off.
Okay, that's reasonable advice. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck, Morris.
You too. I enjoy watching your, or listening to your show.
You can watch the show. You can,
in my mind,
sit there in front of the radio like they used to do with The Shadow. Yeah.
Thanks again.
All right. Good luck, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Sabrina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Sabrina. Where are you?
I am in Reading, Pennsylvania right now in Berks County.
Okay, I know it well, the home of one of the greatest minor league baseball teams in America, the famed Reading Phillies.
Yes, that's very true.
Also the home of a lot of great pretzel bakeries, but I doubt you're calling about either of those things.
Yeah, unfortunately not going to talk about that today.
What can we do with you for?
The other week I was listening on your show, and there was a woman that had called in from the Chester County area, and she had said that she had a problem with what she thought were fungus gnats in and around her home. And I happen to be a mushroom grower. Now, I don't work in Chester County. I work here in Berks County. But we go back and forth between Chester County a lot and work with the other growers down there. And it's actually a forid fly is the problem she's having with, and not a fungus gnat. So I wanted to share what I know about them.
Okay. So you're saying this pest is a forid fly, P-H-O-R-I-D, like a drain fly or a sewer fly.
Exactly.
Okay, good. Tell me what you know.
What we know is the forid flies, we've had them for several years now from the mushroom industry. They're a nuisance fly for us. They don't transmit any diseases to humans or anything like that. So, you know, if people are seeing them around their houses, it's okay. They're just more of an annoyance kind of thing. But they do transmit diseases like us for in our mushroom houses. Unfortunately, right now, there's no pesticides labeled to use on them, except there is one that they can use residentially, but not commercially, like for us.
Well, so, these flies, I presume the mushroom soil is the perfect medium for them,
yes,
because these flies are attracted to decaying organic matter.
They're attracted to the mycelium growing in our compost. They love that. They feed off of that, and you know, the generations of flies keep coming as we go along through our crop here.
And they like it wet, and they're breeding in the wet organic material.
Exactly.
Have you tried BTI, Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis, which is what I recommend for control of mosquitoes outdoors? The BTI
Correct.
Dunks and granules in standing water will prevent the development of the adult fly, because mosquitoes are flies, and BTI is also registered for use against fungus gnats.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we actually do use the donuts and the dunks already. The problem is, at least for us, is we can't put it in like our growing medium. We're not allowed to do that. And they do breed in places where the BTI dunks don't get to. That's why we still have like an issue.
But if you were to petition the EPA, and not just you personally, but like the Mushroom Growers Association of America, to get it labeled for use on mushroom soil, there would be no danger to consumers. BTI is totally harmless to everything.
Absolutely, right, because there's BT corn already. I don't know if anybody's actually gone down that route, and it would be a good thing to explore. And we do have people working on that, but I don't know if they've actually looked at the BTI stuff. We have a committee that works on this stuff, so I can definitely bring that up with them.
Yeah, and
that might help.
Yeah, the only legality involved is the labeling. When BTI first appeared, it was only labeled for mosquito prevention, but there is a big market for it in fungus gnats, in houseplants, and in greenhouses, which is really getting so close to your problem.
Exactly.
I wouldn't even necessarily presume that you're not allowed to use it. You just might want to ask for a clarification. You know, there is a local EPA office everywhere, and you could even start with them. But this is so close to the registered application of using it on houseplant soil. I'm not sure that there's a real clear distinction there, but it might wind up not being a hard thing to be put on the label for mushroom growing, and it would solve your problem literally overnight. So what a homeowner does is different than what you're allowed to do as a registered food producer.
Correct.
Theoretically, these people could get 5-gallon buckets of mushroom soil and treat that mushroom soil with BTI granules and wet it and leave it outside in like cat food cans or pint containers, and the forage flies would try to breed in it, and that would be the end of the life cycle of that generation.
Right. I would definitely recommend them at least using mushroom compost or soil, because we know that the forage are specifically attracted to that. And if, you know, anybody in that area, they can go to any, pretty much any mushroom farm, and they will give them, you know, spent compost. So it's not difficult to get that.
My first garden was grown with mushroom soil.
There you go. It's a great, you know, compost material.
All right, Sabrina, thank you for clearing that up. And maybe I gave you a helpful hint for the future there.
Yeah, we're definitely going to pursue that.
All right, good luck. Keep in touch. Let us know what happens.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will give a brand new talk on the birds and the bees to benefit the scholarship program of the Optimist Club of Freehold, New Jersey, next Saturday, April 14th. Then I'll hop on over to the Haverford Home and Garden Show on Sunday, April 15th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with oysters, hugel culture, roller derby, and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com. And the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in the question of the week, a new homeowner in Grand Rapids had to take down an old dead cottonwood tree. She wonders if she can just pile dirt all around it and perform the technique of permaculture known as hugelkultur, where you just let that wood rot underneath and have things grow on top. I think I got a better idea. I'll tell you what it is after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Bill, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, sir.
And where is
question.
Where is Bill doing well?
Bill's doing well in the downtown Glenmore area.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia?
Yeah.
All right. What can we do you for?
I spend a lot of time in the backyard and the garden. I've got a couple varieties of fruit trees, but I'm having some issues with my peach trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just put out there. I keep tubes for solitary bees. I have some Japanese hornface and black mason bees for pollination, so I maintain them, try to keep them around. But I have three varieties of pretty well-shaped open center peach trees. One variety opens mid-July, and then the next variety about 2 weeks after that, and the next one 2 weeks after that. I was trying to hedge my bets on potential late frosts. But frost doesn't really seem to be my problem. I think pruning might be my problem. So I thought I'd give you a call and see if you can offer some pruning insight before I head out to the backyard here in the next couple of weeks. The trees are full of last year's growth, and there are plenty of water sprouts. In the past 2 years, I don't think I've had enough fruit to bake three pies off of three trees that are 7, 8, 9 years old.
Okay. When have you been pruning them?
In the last couple of years, I tried to get it done by the second week of March, mm-hmm. Before they start to plump up and grow.
Go ahead.
I always thought I was supposed to leave a little bit of a last year's growth on the tree, you know, maybe cut back the growth by maybe 2/3 is sort of what I've been doing.
Okay, that's too much. That's too much. The basic rule of pruning for almost all plants, there are exceptions, but the basic rule is never remove more than 1/3 of the plant in any given year, because that takes a lot of stress. That causes a lot of stress. That's a lot of biomass to replace. So the pruning trick I like with peaches is because the flowers are so drop-dead gorgeous, and the peaches themselves are very difficult to get to maturity. I like to wait until the trees are actively blooming and then go in. And, of course, you want to take out your water sprouts. You want to take out every branch that's pointing upwards. And then the other branches, you want to open them up so that you've got, like, the ribs of an umbrella out there with lots of airflow as much as possible in between each branch while still not removing more than 1/3.
Okay.
The advantage to waiting until the peach is flowering, then you can bring all these branches inside that are covered with these beautiful pink flowers, and the house will look like a flower show, and it's amazing. And that way you don't lose any of the flowers. And then after that, I hope you know you need to remove baby peaches.
Yeah. Okay. I try to leave, you know, three or four fingers in between any from one peach to the next.
Okay.
It pains me to do it, but I do it.
I know. You see this 5-gallon bucket full of baby peaches and you think you're robbing yourself, but that's really the only way to get good results at the end of the season. So you're taking off at least half of the peaches.
Probably taking off between a third and a half, somewhere in there.
Go for a half to 3/4.
Okay.
I know it's counterintuitive, but the fewer fruits you leave on the tree, the better your results are going to be. And then what happens that you don't get those peaches to maturity? Do they drop? Do they get insect problems? Do they get brown rot?
They don't have any visual issues on them. I mean, yeah, they get some spots here and there, but they get to be a little bit larger than a golf ball.
Right.
And then they seem to just drop off.
I think that might simply be lack of thinning. If you're more aggressive at thinning, the tree won't feel the need to drop off extra peaches. So the answer here might just be to double down on your thinning. Prune a little bit less, only 1/3 of the tree, but don't be afraid to thin that tree madly. 3/4 of the peaches is not unusual to have to be removed, and then you should have a good range. Do you have a mulch of compost underneath them?
Yeah, we compost, and you know, I make a couple 5-gallon buckets, and then I take it out and just dump it around the tree, and then I mulch with my grass clippings.
No, compost alone. Compost prevents disease at the soil line. You don't want to put grass clippings in there. First, they're full of nitrogen. They're going to inhibit the fruiting of the tree. If the lawn was treated, they could kill the tree or stress the tree. And grass clippings should always be left on your lawn. They're the perfect lawn food. The compost itself is perfect.
Okay.
All right, so you got some different things to try for this year. I think you're going to do good.
We'll do that. Mike, I appreciate it.
All right, good luck, Bill.
Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Patty, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Patty. How are you?
I'm doing great. Wonderful. I'm so happy that I get to talk to you. I'm happy.
I'm happy to talk to you. Where are you so great and wonderful?
Okay, I am in Clarksville, Tennessee. It's about 45 miles from Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, good. Do you pick us up on broadcast radio there?
Yes, I do. I've been listening about 3 or 4 months. I totally love your show. I get up early just to listen to your show.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, we love our Tennessee listeners. You know, I'll throw a little bird out there into the room. It's been a long time since I've been invited to speak down in Nashville, and I had a real good time last time. So,
well, you need to come, and if you come, you can stay at our house, okay? We have a spare bedroom.
I have to admit, I am so spoiled by the Opryland Hotel.
Stay where you are then.
Yeah, which people on the outside think must be some kind of country music museum, but it's a botanic garden.
It's beautiful.
It's got a Mississippi.
One year for Christmas.
Oh, it got a Mississippi Delta. It's got a giant football field of nothing but bromeliads, whatever. Bromeliads. There we go. Dyslexia
cool.
is its own reward. Anyway, it's a great place for anybody who visits there. The name, I think, confuses people, but the interior is like a flower show 24/7.
Yes, correct.
All right, what can we do for Patty near Nashville?
Okay, what I have, Mike, is a bamboo plant. It's a house plant. I've had it about 5 years. I have 2-in-1 pot. It's about 2 feet tall. And it was dropping like a leaf a week. It's doing better now. My question is, it's in a clay pot. Do I need to repot it?
Do you have what was originally sold to you as lucky bamboo?
Yes, sir.
You are so lucky. You
All right.
have an amazingly green thumb because your lucky bamboo should have been dead 4.5 years ago.
All right. Yay.
Okay. So lucky bamboo is not a bamboo of any kind. It's in the houseplant family known as Dracaena. Very popular plant, but very unusual. It does not, first of all, no soil.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no soil?
It is one of the few plants that does well in water, but not any water. It needs really clean, really pure water. You can't.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll start to yellow if it gets tap water.
Okay.
So what you want to do is get like a nice glass vase and fill it with clean water. You can even put some marbles in the bottom if you want it to stand more upright if it's a tall vase. Get rid of any yellowed leaves.
Okay.
And then you can use spring water, rainwater, or distilled water.
Okay, we've got the osmosis water. Is that good?
Yes, that should be fine. Okay. Reverse osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
No dirt, and oddly enough, almost no light.
Really? Oh, my goodness. I've had it close to the light, the window.
Yep. That's why I say you're lucky. You know,
really? And you know what, Mike? I've had it in soil. When I first got it, it was in water, and I put it in soil. I didn't know any better, but it's still living.
See, you got a green thumb. So,
hallelujah.
And it's about to get much greener because, again, you're going to.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so happy. I've got the glass vase. I've got everything right here at the house. I'll get that. Oh, cool.
Make sure the water is nice and clean because the plant has been in dirt. You really want to scrub the bottom of it, get all the organisms from the soil off, put it just in clean water, and then just ambient light. It's almost counterintuitive. It's a plant that doesn't grow in soil and doesn't like strong light.
Wow, I did not know that. Okay, cool.
But if you do that, they're both going to thrive.
Wonderful. I'm just so happy. In 2 days is my birthday, so I get an early birthday present from you.
A dirty birthday present. I like that.
Yeah, 74 years old. I can't even believe I'm that old, but I don't feel that old.
Well, the plants love you. That's clear.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I love your show. God bless you. I appreciate it so much.
God bless you, Patty, and a happy birthday.
You too. Have a wonderful day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Rich, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, welcome, Mike. Glad to get my first call in with you.
Well, good to have you here with me. Rich, where are you?
I am in Smithsburg, Maryland.
Smithsburg. Now, I know Maryland pretty well. Whereabouts are you?
You know where Hagerstown is?
Oh, okay. So you're in the greater D.C. area.
Yeah, a little about 10 minutes south of Hagerstown, right
okay.
up from Frederick.
All right. What can we do for Rich in Maryland?
I have become a super hot pepper grower and love the peppers. I can't even notice a jalapeno at this point. Most habaneros go down pretty easy. And I've been growing one particular ghost and Carolina Reaper pepper. It's mm-hmm. on its third year. I overwinter them in my garage under a 400-watt high-pressure sodium light.
That's a good light. Those old-school high-intensity lights, they eat up a lot of power, but they give off the perfect radiation for the plants. And you don't have to have the plants near them like you do with fluorescents or LEDs. They can be up in the ceiling, and they do a darn good imitation of the sun. I've got a 400-watt up in the ceiling of my wintertime plant room to keep my peppers and birds of paradise alive.
That's awesome. I keep a heater in there, so I keep it in the low to mid-60s.
You know, what I have found, if you run that light at night, and you get one of those little fans that they sell to circulate the area, and you got it up in a peaked roof, that's often enough to heat the room.
Oh, okay. I might try that.
You know, because they give off a load of heat, and it goes up, and it gets wasted. But there's specialized little fans that blow the heat right back down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just wasting all that thermal energy.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So my big question is, this is the second winter, and these little aphids love the leaves and come around. I've tried soapy water, neem oil, but eventually they get the leaves and I'm just left with stems come spring, even though they pop back.
Exactly. The one nice thing about pepper plants at this time of year that have been overwintered, they may not look their best, but they're not dead. And they still have so much biomass, they're going to flower and fruit twice as fast, three times as fast as a young plant.
Yep, I love that.
So the work starts in September. Long before the nights get chilly, you want to start either potting your plants up or bringing the pots closer to the house. You want to get a hose that has an adjustable nozzle with a really sharp stream. And I want to see leaves blowing off the plant. I want you to have one hand behind it to cradle it. And I want you to be really blasting, laser blasting every leaf, every little crotch. You're going to blow off some flowers. Don't worry about it. They'll grow back. But you really want to do it thoroughly. Then you want to move that plant to an in-between area. Go get your next one and do that. But don't put them right next to each other. Make sure you give them all one good soaking, then leave them outside. The next day, in sequence, do it again as if you had not done it at all. And make sure you spray down or wipe down the outside of the pot, the inner
okay.
and the outer rim. They can
okay.
hide there.
Okay.
So do it really good, and then you bring them inside to your place where they're going to stay for the winter time.
Okay.
So prevention is everything. And then you want to order what are called green lace wings. These are beneficial insects that will be shipped to you in the egg stage.
Okay.
And you want to order like three sets for three separate releases over the winter.
Okay.
You want to keep these plants. You don't want to overwater them.
Yep.
But you do want to keep them misted. You want to mist them every morning. And then after they've been in the house for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you want to take one of these either cards or containers of green lacewing eggs and place it in the center of the peppers. Or if you can cut it apart or divide it, you know, put a piece of a card around each plant and then keep moistening the leaves. Keep misting the leaves every morning. When the lacewing larva emerge from the eggs, they're going to be desperately thirsty. So having those leaves wet down really attracts them. These aren't going to look like adult lace wings. They're going to look like little alligators, little crocodile kind of things. And they're called the aphid lion because each of these little crocodile alligator guys is going to eat 40 aphids a day.
Okay, that's awesome.
And then they will then metamorphosize into adult lace wings. They'll mate and they'll lay their own eggs. But you still will have enough of a supply. Keep the eggs in your fridge. to keep releasing fresh ones every 3 or 4 weeks, you may not get to the end of the season aphid-free because they are tenacious, but I bet you can reduce your problems by 90%.
And you're not a fan of neem oil.
I'm not a fan of neem oil, but, you know, then you can't use the beneficial insects because you'll smother them as well.
Gotcha, gotcha. And one last question, if I could. My baby seedlings that I start out with, the best way to get the stems, because they want to stretch and they don't have the stem strength, what's the best way to get those stems buffed up? Because I'm giving them fish emulsion.
No. That's just they're too far away from the light. The ones that you're starting from seed, you want a shop light. You want a 4-foot-long shop light.
And I've been using LED.
Well, okay, but just keep the tops of the plants close to the light.
Okay, okay.
I mean, almost touching.
Okay.
Not 2-3 inches away, they're not getting any light.
Okay.
But legginess, that equals lack of light, not lack of nutrition.
Good deal. This is awesome. You are the man. Thank
you.
Yes,
I am. All right. Good luck, sir. Well, it's time for me to announce that I will appear at a fundraiser for the Bayshore Center in Port Norris, New Jersey on Thursday evening, April 26th, at the Camden County Green Garden Fair in Cherry Hill on Saturday, May 5th, and at St. Paul's Episcopal Church's Environmental Fair in Exton, PA on Saturday, May 12th. After that, it's off to Cortez, Colorado on May 19th and the legendary Chautauqua Institute in late July. Don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with Stumpy Oysters and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And Smart Pots, makers of the Smart Pot and the Big Bag Bed, fabric containers for your performance container garden. Learn more about the features and benefits of the Smart Pot at smartpots.com. That's smartpots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. It is a very common problem. A dead tree gets taken down, but for one reason or another, the stump remains in the ground. Hygge culture, the permaculture technique of covering that stump with lots of soil and growing things in it as the roots slowly decompose, is a popular choice in these situations, but I think we got a better one. I'll let you know what it is after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Janet, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you,
I'm
Janet.
Speaking with you.
It is our pleasure. Where are you?
I'm in Kane, Pennsylvania, which is in the Allegheny Forest in the northwest corner, about 120 miles from Erie on top of a mountain.
Wow. I have spoken in Erie several times, and in situations like yours where the season is short and the terrain can be really treacherous, I think you have more gardeners per square foot than in nicer places because it's more of a challenge.
It sure is. We try harder.
All right, so what can we do for Janet in northwest Pennsylvania?
I want to have a carved pumpkin walk in October, but as part of this buildup, I want children and adults to plant and grow pumpkins in cane so that we have a lot of pumpkins for the walk, on porches, and to appreciate how hard it is to grow a pumpkin.
Well, you know, Janet, it's not really that hard. There's really only one pest you have to guard against, and that's the squash vine borer. So wrapping the vine or the stem of the plant where it enters the ground, like just with gauze, not medical tape, but gauze. If you just wrap that for about like 6 inches to a foot, a little bit underground and a little bit above ground, then the insect that lays its eggs on the stem that hatch into the caterpillars can't reach the stem. You don't have to be out there every day wiping down the stem, which is another way to do it, or keeping watch. You can just do a physical barrier. Back in the old days, farmers would use tinfoil for this. Anything works that makes a physical barrier so that the moth can't lay her eggs right on the stem. After that, however, I hope you realize that pumpkins are the most space insensitive plants in your garden. They take up more space than any other plant. Their vines just keep growing all season long, and they typically need a lot of leaf cover to get enough sunlight to produce those big fruits. So they take up a lot of space.
I want to know, should we do a program where we start them and transplant them, or should we plant them right in the ground?
I would say absolutely start and transplant. And it can't be somebody's first time at starting. You need to recruit a local nursery or garden center, or perhaps you have a talented gardener nearby who has a good-sized greenhouse. You definitely want to give the people six-week-old starts, because putting seed in the ground, you're going to lose everything to mice and voles and everything like that.
Okay.
And the nice thing is you're not going to have to work against your season. People don't realize it. They think that they plant their pumpkins when they put their tomatoes and peppers out and say where you are, which would be around June 1st. And the pumpkins actually ripen up a lot quicker than people expect. So in most cases, if you plant at the same time as your summer fruits and vegetables, you got your pumpkins in like August and September. So I remember the last time I did this calculation, it was for an average size pumpkin, a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin. If my memory serves me well, I don't think you put the plants in the ground until almost July, because you want the pumpkins to ripen up mid-September. You don't want them to be ready in August, or they might not hold up.
Right.
So have you chosen a variety?
No. Do you have one to suggest?
Well, not off the top of my head. You want to look around. The most important thing is obviously you want to get the right size, but you want to look at that days to maturity. So you want to count backwards from like September 10th or September 15th. Count backwards the number of days to maturity, say it's 60, and that's when you want to plant your pumpkins. It will be a late planting, which will be good because the soil will be nice and warm. The pumpkins will take off like mad. You'll get good quality fruits. Now, another important thing that people don't think about is once you get three really good-looking fruits on a vine, after that you start pulling off flowers and small fruits, because the pumpkin vine will continue to set fruit, but you want it to let like six pumpkins. Then you want to go up and down that vine, and you want to pick the best three, pull the others off, and pull off any flowers after that. So that's it. The timing, the plants go into the ground later than you think, and you got to thin the vine to just three pumpkins per plant, and they take up a lot of room. But yeah. That's the basics. If you keep those three things in mind, you're going to do pretty good even your first year.
Okie doke. Thank you so much.
All right. Sounds great. If this comes off, send us a picture. We want to see lots of pumpkins.
I will. All right. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. James, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Hello, Mike.
Hello, James. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm in Norman, Oklahoma, and I'm excited to start a new garden project once I get your advice.
All right. Very good. We love our Oklahoma listeners. What can we do for you, James?
Well, I'm excited to try growing beer hops this year, and I have two locations around my home that are available for me to make planters. I have time to prep the locations, as the rhizomes aren't actually arriving until mid-April. So I'm wondering, with a north-facing house, I have some direct sunlight near a rose garden in a raised flower bed, or I have a section next to a shed that is blocking the afternoon sun. And I'm wondering which of the two locations you think would be better for growing rhizomes in my area.
Okay, so you've already made the choice to do this, and you've ordered the plants.
Correct.
What kind of hops did you buy?
I bought Cascade, and I bought Chinook, and I bought Nugget, which are three pretty popular hops.
Cascade may be the most popular hop plant.
Yeah.
You know, it has become a specialty region crop, but back in the day when people brewed their own beer, hops were grown in every state that had a sizable population. There's really no place you can't grow hops. The enemy of the plant is humidity, which is, in my experience, not been a big problem in Oklahoma.
No. Well, we do get some humid summers and in the spring, and the summer is really, really long. Like, it starts in January and ends in November, so.
The hop plants are not going to mind the heat, and you're not going to mind the length of the summer, because it means they're going to produce more cones, more flowering parts that you're going to use in your brewing. Big enemy is humidity. You got to give the plants as much air circulation as possible. So, for instance, growing them up the side of a shed might be asking for trouble. The best hops are open on all sides.
I see. So possibly running a string from the raised flower garden up to the basketball goal in the direct sunlight would be fine.
It's not enough room.
Really?
They're going to be 20 feet long by the end of your season.
In just 1 year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Might take 2 years, but you get a good summer with good growing conditions. These are some of the fastest growing plants in cultivation. Go back to your source and really diligently check the typical growing season and the final length. You got to allow for at least 15 feet high.
Okay.
And we're talking like wire or, you know, nothing like, quote, string.
Yeah, there's like a coarse twine that was recommended through the seller of the hop rhizome.
Right. And you'd want probably a dozen of those twines per plant, not just one.
Wow.
These are really impressive and massive plants. I had a friend when I worked at Rodale Press. They grew hops up from the ground level to their deck, which was on the second floor of their house. The hop plants went from the bottom of the deck all the way up and over the deck and made this awning that made you sleepy in the summertime.
That's excellent.
And they were thick. They were wide. So you will always be mad at yourself for using not enough support and having a vine collapse in maybe July or August. And then, you know, you're kind of hurt there because it's almost impossible to get these things back up in the air again.
Right.
You will never curse yourself for doubling down or tripling down on support. You want double or triple redundancy. Whatever you think you need, keep stringing.
I gotcha. That's great advice.
And where you live, you know, they're going to need a lot of water. Because not only are you naturally dry, but that wind out there is just going to be constantly sucking the moisture out of them.
Right.
But that wind is also going to keep airflow going around them. So, you know, you got to provide good water, but you've got that natural airflow. You've got nature's strongest fan blowing on those things most days.
Right.
Have you tested your water? How alkaline is it?
We're on a well, and our pH is normal.
Okay, good, because you know there are a lot of alkaline waters in Oklahoma.
Yes.
Okay. If you've got the water on a well, go crazy with the water. Think about how much biomass this plant is putting on. It's going to be constantly thirsty, especially with your wind, but you've got that natural airflow. And if you give the plants enough support, that's what I'm hearing here. That's what you're underestimating is the height and the width of these plants. This is your game to lose.
I gotcha.
All right, man?
Well, I will do my best with it, Mike, and you stop by any time to have a fresh brewed, fresh hopped, amazing beer the next time you're in Oklahoma.
All right. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great day. We'll be listening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. There's more than one way to use a tree stump. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's question.
Sure, Mike. Britt in Grand Rapids writes, "We moved into a new home last April, and as you suggest, just took the first year to see what was naturally going on in the yard. The only real action we took was to change an existing flower bed into our new blueberry patch. Thanks for the recent question of the week on blueberries, by the way. And we also had a dangerously old cottonwood tree taken down. There's a big stump from the cottonwood left in the middle of an old flower bed. I remembered your episode on hugelkultur and went back to read the article at your A to Z archives. That specific question was about a tree that had fallen, but I only have the stump left. Once it gets decaying, I'm thinking about introducing edible mushrooms to accelerate this. Can I hugelkultur the stump and grow some shade-loving perennials in that bed?"
Well, first I have to point out that her location allows Britt to grow the type of blueberries that recent article focused on. The tiny but flavorful native lowbush varieties that exist naturally in the northern U.S. and Canada. The fruits are small, but they pack quite a flavor punch. And our favorite advisor on medicinal properties of plants, the late great Dr. Jim Duke, would add that such a native, uncultivated variety would have the highest concentration of beneficial phytonutrients per gram.
And Dr. Duke's research for the USDA found that blueberries in general might be the single healthiest thing you can eat, especially for prevention of dementia.
So grow lots of them. Now, there are many ways you can use that stump, and growing shrooms is number one as far as I'm concerned. A quick check of the Fungi Perfecti website reveals that cottonwoods, a type of poplar tree, are one of the best woods for growing some of the most desirable mushrooms. That stump can be inoculated with the spore of two different types of oyster mushrooms, pearl and blue oyster, and turkey tail, although the oysters will grow better in a northern climate. And the time to get started is now.
How exactly would they do this?
Well, for growing specifically on a cut stump, the folks at Fungi Perfecti,
a mushroom supply company run by your old friend Paul Stamets.
Oh yeah, Paul is even more full of shiitake than I am. Anyway, you order what's called plug spawn of the desired mushroom variety, drill holes in the stump, drop in the plugs, brush the stump lightly with melted beeswax, and then keep it shaded and moist. Britt said in her email that their property has a lot of shade. But if this place happened to be in full sun, just use shade cloth or even a big beach umbrella to block the sun. Of course, this is just the short take. Detailed directions are available online. And you know, there's also another intriguing mycelial possibility.
And that is?
Morels. It turns out the cottonwoods are a good host for everybody's favorite wild mushroom. But Paul warns that you shouldn't try and grow more than one species on a single stump or log, so they're going to have to choose between the oysters and the morels.
And then hugelkultur in their future?
You know, it depends on how much they like those oyster mushrooms and how well they're going to grow for them. If the mushrooms flourish, I would just dedicate the area to shrooming. If the oysters do really well, the harvest should get bigger until all the wood is gone.
What if the oysters are not Rockefellian?
Well, then we'll drop back to my old basic stump advice, which is kind of lazy hugelkultur. You frame out the area around the stump, score the top surface of the stump with a chainsaw to speed its decomposition, and then fill the frame, which should ideally be about 6 inches taller than the top of the stump, with your native soil and plant what you want over top. If the plants seem a little slow to grow, amend the soil with small amounts of composted horse or poultry manure, corn gluten meal, or some other fertilizer that's naturally high in nitrogen.
In case the decaying wood sucks up all the nitrogen on its way to becoming soil.
Right. Or you could just grow really low-nutrient plants that don't need a lot of nitrogen the first couple of years.
Well, I have to read a little bit more of Britt's wonderful email. She continues, I also wanted you to know about the experimental crop I'm planning for this year. When I was picking out my seeds, I saw that the company sold artichoke seeds and that they're annuals in my USDA Zone 6. I always try to get something new and weird to try out every season. They don't always work out, but it's like buying a lottery ticket. It's fun to dream.
Artichokes in the north are difficult, but they're not impossible.
And that's not all. She closes with, please let me know if you ever come to the Grand Rapids area. You can come out and see one of my team's roller derby games.
Ha! I'll bet you she's a jammer. Well, those sure were some interesting options about dealing with tree stumps, now wasn't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to fry my oysters if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please include your location. Oh, please, please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to ask us. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Please check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website stumpy. Our associate producer of Production Association is Brett Rader. Oysterish Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, is yelling, Oysterish? Oysterish? I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I have no idea what it means either. But I'm late for the movies, the cookies are burning, the washer overflowed, the dryer smells funny. There's a holdup in the Bronx, and Brooklyn's broken out in fights. So I'll just yell, Car 54, where are you? And see you, with hopefully Tootie and Muldoon in tow, next week. What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do, only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.